Recording.
Okay, I guess today we're going to talk about the box published by Tanglewood Press in 1969, titled Seven Objects. It's the box that I always refer to as the post-minimalist box, in that I see the seven artists having primarily a relationship to that class of artists.
It's 2 o'clock.
The artists included in Seven Objects are Bruce Nauman, Keith Saunier, Eva Hess, David Bradshaw, Richard Serra, and Stephen Kaltenbach. The box itself, unlike all the other boxes that we've reviewed thus far, is particularly sturdy. I guess it makes sense in that it's carrying rather heavy things, a la Richard Serra's steel multiple.
Enlarged things as well.
The Saunier as well as the Bradshaw is rather large-ish.
It's like a chest or a cask or a coffin.
Well, for a small child, maybe. But I guess that's not funny, Amber. In any case, the box itself is made out of wood and sturdy. Certainly not something that you would send this publication in. It would have to be boxed thereafter. I don't see the box itself. The box itself is not an artwork. In other words, when looking at those SMS folders, the outside of the folders were also considered to be were artworks by.
It's just a fine piece of box craftsmanship.
Yes, and
which is no less an artwork.
Well, I beg to differ. You must have just had lunch and have a lot of energy, I guess, based on that comment. Anyway, the box itself is merely a container. I'm usually keeping this box closed up to preserve the things contained therein. Anyway, it contains these seven multiples, and it's a mixed bag in terms of types. The Nauman publication is a record, 33.5 RPM micro groove record. I'm assuming micro groove is not a limited play record. The cover for it is silk screened, I think, and is rather curious in that, well, it's not necessarily curious, but it basically depicts front and back Nauman performing the piece, a studio work, which the sound of the record essentially goes with it. It's the sound recording of it.
So it's him doing a performance in his studio as the sound of that performance?
That's what I'm assuming, yes. Uh-huh. And black vinyl, black plastic,
so
LP record, soundtrack.
And
it's for a particular work. It's for, well, it says what it is. It's from First Violin Film, playing all four strings on the violin, two violin problem, two playing two notes very close together. Maybe it isn't, actually. Hmm. Certainly this looks more closer to it. Side B, rhythmic stamping, four rhythms in preparation for videotape problems. That seems more like it. Black person is cover silk screen with photographs of the artist from videotape stamping in the studio. Okay, so it is it refers to what is on side B of the record. Also, it's quite something. I mean, it's reproducing the monitor, a video monitor. And
you're holding it upside down. Yeah, that means it's supposed to be upside down.
Yeah, I'm assuming based
because he signed it this way.
Yeah, I'm assuming. Well, yeah, I'm assuming that it's that way. On the other end, maybe it's not. Okay, maybe he just signed it incorrectly.
And it's an edition of 100.
It's an edition of 100. Yeah, 100. Mm-hmm. And. This is included in the most recent retrospective of the early work by Bruce Nauman. It's his second multiple. Anyway, also included in Seven Objects is this work by Alan Serrett. This is a untitled work that incorporates reprocessed nylon net about 24 inches long. Preferred presentation format is to be removed from the black box. So this black box contains this piece, which then goes in the box, the wooden box. Anyway, that's the preferred presentation format. Again, it is numbered, and I guess, unlike the Nauman piece, is not signed, as there is nowhere to sign it.
Are those tags intended to be sort of part of the artwork? No,
I just see them as being information, or at least this particular tag, the Sarah tag, functions in that way. There is a piece of printed material that is included in this box that concerns the work by Kaltenbach, and that's something altogether different. That one is supposed to send back to Multiples Inc. to identify where or to locate where the work is actually embedded. No, I don't see the Serrett signed anywhere. Which I guess wouldn't be that typical in that I've never seen a Serrett sculpture from this vintage that is signed. Maybe there's a certificate. However, I'm not certain if his work is sold with a certificate. I've only really had drawing material by him besides this box.
How does this netting piece relate to his drawing material?
Well, the swirling forms is very similar. I mean, his drawings from this period, or in general, from let's just say the 60s and 70s, depicts this. His drawings tend to refer specifically to his sculpture. This being a more modest size piece, but would be more or less typical like material, in that he's using let's just say material that before this time would not have been considered typical sculptural material, in that you don't hear about artists from the 30s using nylon netting often in making a sculpture. I mean, maybe a small portion of it might include some nylon netting, but this entire piece is made up of that material. And the unique works by him, there might be a kind of heap of it on the gallery floor, or there might be something suspended from the ceiling, a kind of ball of it, or a kind of semi-ball of this sort of material. Recent retrospective at the Drawing Center in New York had a number of works from this vintage included. Also in this box is a Eva Hess multiple. To my knowledge, the only multiple that she produced in her short career. It's titled Enclosed, and it's a pliable object made from a gauze-like tape dipped in liquid rubber, wrapped around a blown balloon and powdered, average 3 by 10 inches overall. For her, this would be very like her unique works as well. She worked in latex, and I've seen this particular multiple offered in a group of like works. In other words, I guess at some point some of these seven objects boxes were broken up, and because I guess of the great interest in her work, Eva Hesse's work, there have been people that have accumulated some Hesse and works from this edition and kind of made a work out of it. It sounds a little doesn't quite sound right to me, but I guess I would say that unlike the other works in this box, or most of the other works in this box, the Hesse piece teeters on the line of being unique, in that they're all a little bit different in overall form. And in this piece, although in quite okay condition, this example anyway, tends to, because of the nature of the materials, somehow degrade.
Well, I mean, it's a multiple just like any other multiple would be. It has its own variety and form that happens. Like the Sarah is similar because it's a slice
right.
of
those,
steel.
But those are the two examples of being somewhat different. I mean,
and as it ages too. This one.
The Kaltenbach is like.
You're asking about like manufacturing. So when things made a little bit more by hand, but even a manufacturer, a stamp has its own unique qualities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I would say that overall, in the range of multiples, you have some multiples that are like more or less identical. And then you have a certain range of multiples that teeter on this line of being something else, a kind of, which I refer to as unique multiples, or things...
Repetitive, but not necessarily.
Yeah, that are not right on. I mean, these are manufactured additions here. It's just that the Hesse, based on its inherent materiality, has more unique characteristics than, let's just say, the Saunier in this box. Okay.
Her work was about repetition anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, but it's but it, yeah, it is. I mean, there is a certain seriality. There is a certain seriality to it, but that the point is, this is unlike the other works by her. This is the one work that is an addition by her. Anyway, I just see there being. In regards to multiples, there are certain multiples that hit this line of being something a little bit different than what the rest of them are. I mean, I can go through that vitrine over there of editions from the 90s, and you know that Gary Hume, they're all the same more or less. You know, the Damien Hirst edition is basically the same all the way through. Same with the Paul Etienne Lincoln. Same thing with the Lorna Simpson. Same thing with the Anya Galacho. But there are examples where the Creed, you know, the gauge of the masking tape might be a little bit different, so there might be some minor difference. The Kiki box, which we probably. We may or may not talk about it at a later date. That box itself has unique works in it, despite the fact that it's an edition of 30 box. There are drawings in there that are unique. But there is like a real, like the Chapman phone card. They're all the same, okay?
Yeah.
Regarding the Kaltenbach, This is a curious work by an artist that is typically thought of in regards to conceptual art. However, some of his work considered to be conceptual art. However, I guess he was one of the often participators in street works. Stephen Lieber. Hi, been a little bit busy and I'm in the midst of something, so let me call you back. Bye. As I said, Kaltenbach was one of the artists that was often included in street works exhibitions. The 0 to 9 sponsored street works show or exhibition or whatever day.
It's 2:15.
He was a participant of. There was a show, I guess, that was put on by the Architectural League in New York with a Les Levine design poster, I think, that he also participated in. So that Kaltenbach at this time did a number of street works, and this work in particular is a very interesting, very nicely connects with that kind of work by him. It's a piece, it's a bronze plaque, sidewalk plaque, titled Fire. The owner may complete this unfinished work by embedding it in any sidewalk. When the plaque is placed, when the plaque is in place, please notify Tanglewood Press of its location with the enclosed postcard. He did a number of these plaques. This is just one of them. Other ones that he did also had one word identifications. Other ones include, well, they're not all one word. Artworks, flesh, and bone are other examples of his plaque works. The Sarah, which is heavy, is titled Rolled, Encased, and Sawed, is 3 pounds per square foot of chemical lead, which has been rolled and encased in a lead pipe and sawed into 12 inch lengths. Each piece is stamped and numbered.
Rolled and encased in a lead pipe. So yeah. The outside is a lead pipe.
Right.
And the inside is rolled lead.
And chemical lead, which has been rolled. Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating.
Uh-huh. Sort of a nice paperweight, I guess. No, just joking.
Well, the pipe on the outside takes the form of this inside chemical lead, so it might be, he may have been fascinated by it because they influence each other.
Well, I mean, the interior is molding to the you know, exterior, opposed to vice versa.
Okay.
Right?
It's hard to tell. I don't know, because it's just a...
I mean, that's how I understand
it. Unless it was sawed.
Rolled, encased, and sawed. I mean, unless this...
If you look at it, though, maybe when it was sliced, it formed, because it has... Like, if you push down on a piece of bread, it sort of crushes a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of amazing to have a material like lead look so flexible.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that brings me back to my favorite question is, why does this make this work post-minimal?
Well...
As opposed to minimal.
Okay, well...
And how does it... Not opposed, but how does that
okay.
Follow?
Well, a few things. For one thing, this period of making, this time period follows, you might say, the earlier time period of artists associated with minimalism, for one thing. So it's after minimalism in terms of when those artists early emerged. Secondly, the artists that were associated with post-minimalism were using different materials than the artists associated with minimalism. And besides using different materials, their concerns were also quite different. Post-minimalism is also a broad way of, is just one way of describing artists that were also associated with movements that are lesser known, but are also were basically crossover or the same eccentric abstraction, which was Lucy Lepard's way of referring to these artists, and also arte povera. Germano Chalant, in his book on arte povera, included a number of American artists, Sarah and Nauman, for example, at minimum, as being artists that meet his definition of arte povera. Another way of distinguishing these artists from those artists associated with minimalism is that these artists are concerned with material form, and not that the minimal sculptors aren't, but the form that the material the material form follows the material function of the works. In addition, these artists removed all metaphorical or mysticism from the materials. In addition, they basically were reevaluating, sculpture's formal and material definitions. Basically, they're also alike. The minimalists were concerned with how these works were situated in a space, but I think the way the works were presented was quite different, in that if you were using felt, how the felt fell, how the felt actually formed into something was how that material was used. Ditto for some of the other materials. Basically, if
so
you're going
to... It's sort of like a malleability of material. That's what we're talking about.
Well, visually, materially, the artists that were associated with post-minimalism, the materials were different. Yeah, they were using material that was, to some extent, more malleable. But, for example, I would say that in a general sense, because certainly, when you see a Sarah throw, a lead throw, that isn't exact. I don't really see that as material that's exactly malleable.
A lead throw is a piece of lead that...
No, he had molten lead, and he would throw it into a corner, for example, and it would like mold to the corner. And so it's a...
Well, it's not a flexible material once it's set, but it's kind of commenting on the flexing, the changing of materials, or the material quality of things, the way that they... The form that they take on when in different heats or
a few other works in this box worth showing. One is the Saunier piece titled "Plaster Cast in Satin," not particularly descriptive. It's to be hung on a wall with two nails. This is. I guess one of two works in this container of multiples that the work is to be located on the wall. The rest of them have a very different presentation formats. Again, Saunier from this period of time with this material would be considered within his repertoire, this satin material. He did, you know, various works using this. And the fact that this kind of had this piece has this droopy anti form like drape to it is very typical as well. Little mending here. There we go.
Mm-hmm. Cut off a long thread.
Mm-hmm.
So this piece is intended to go on the wall, but you said the others are the Kaltenbach in the cement.
Right.
The
Nauman is a record to be played.
On top of the box.
Right. The Hesse is basically, the Hesse and the Sarah are basically tabletop-like works. And then the only other item here that is to be mentioned, making seven, is something also that goes on the wall. It is a piece by David Bradshaw called Tears, Wet and Dry Materials Painting on Canvas About 20 by 50 Inches. So it's actually a big-ish work. It's basically green and has this very acid looking feel. It reminds me of something you might see in the underneath your car. It's really rather it really looks like something that was the canvas here looks to be something that collected this debris, this paint, this grime, opposed to something that actually was opposed to something that actually was painted in a more traditional sense. I don't know really much, if anything, about David Bradshaw. He was something, I think, somebody that was associated with this group of artists for this short moment, and I think dropped out because of lack of interest, or dropped out because of a lack of critical interest. I don't know what happened to David Bradshaw. Whatever happened to David Bradshaw? I guess that's something to...
Also looks like it was possibly cut out of a larger piece of canvas.
Could be. No idea.
Everything's to the outside.
Yeah. It's to be hung on the wall with the enclosed cut nails. Which is interesting also because that suggests that you literally sort of... there is a format, actually. Come to see it. Looking on the back, it's stamped. And there's an arrow suggesting format, you basically are to hang this from these two cut nails, but I don't see a hole, so I guess you just literally drive a nail through the canvas itself. That's this box. It's pretty much, from my point of view, one of the more significant addition assemblings from this period. In not just because of the artists that have been included, which are quite a good array, but the examples of things. That are included are, let's just say, of a certain size and of a certain quality that is a lot different from, let's just say, the sort of run-of-the-mill multiple production. These don't come off as souvenirs, or they don't come off as necessarily small works. by the artists. There is a certain integrity that these works in this box contain. I've never seen, for no good reason, I don't recall ever seeing this group of things installed as an exhibition, but it just seems to me that it would be take up a quite nice corner of a reasonable sized gallery. I mean, it's, you know, not a, it's a show in itself, and it most definitely sums up or speaks reasonably well in an overview fashion about this moment in contemporary art going on in at least the United States.
Yeah, and if it were an exhibition, you'd again have this experience of a moment of making with sound work and sculptural pieces. You get a really clear idea of what the artists were really investigating then. That's a heavy box. I should have helped you.
It's rather heavy. The other box that I'd like to discuss today is an edition from around, well, a little later, from 1975, so 6 years later, that was produced on the occasion of an exhibition called Salto Arte. I don't exactly know what that means, Salto Arte, but it was a exhibition that took place in Belgium, well, this was published by a newspaper, a journal called Pour, which was located in Brussels. But I believe the exhibition itself did not take place in Brussels, but in a smaller town. I don't know if it was Antwerp or another town, but I'm more or less certain that it didn't take place in Brussels, and it was the exhibition. I believe there is a catalog for the exhibition, and that catalog is titled Je. It's a catalog that has boys on the cover. It's a square catalog. I forget the name right now. In any case, what you see here is something that was published on the occasion of this Salto Arte exhibition. And the artists included are primarily European, but for, you know, a handful of Americans. And there were two versions of this catalog. One edition of 1,000 version, and which the boxes are numbered, and then another version that included signed components, and then I guess there was an edition of 31, which was the artist edition, I'm imagining. This box I was given, believe it or not, by my brother, who is working at Spironi Westwater. And it's my understanding, based on the contents here, that this box was probably Conrad Lug's box, Conrad Fischer. And Conrad Fischer, for a period of time, was one of the principals of Spironi Westwater. Conrad Fischer is the German gallerist who had a gallery in Dusseldorf for, I don't know, 30 years, and his wife continues to have it. He was one of the artists associated with capitalism, realism, The German variant, you might say, or
his
quasi.
His gallery was, or he. You said
he was also an artist. Yeah,
oh,
Who was associated with an art movement called Capital Realism, which is a sort of German pop art, you might say. That's a very sort of brief way of characterizing it. The other members, principal members of Capital Realism, would have been, or are, Gerhard Richter was a member, Sigmar Polka was somebody that also participated, Vostell, Hedeka, as well as K.P. Bremer, and Konrad Lug. There might be somebody else, but at least that group alone. So, Man of the Salto Arte... This box edited on the occasion of the manifestation Salto Arte on 23 May 19 is a circus tent at Ixelles. So maybe it is. Maybe this was offered. This was presented in Brussels and was realized with this weekly newspaper Poor in Brussels. The box itself, because we are concerned with boxes here, the box itself was specially generated, drawn, whatever, conceived by the Belgian artist Panamarenko. Inside the box there are 31 works by artists. Some are objects. For example, the Christo work is a wrapped object. You have books included by Carl Andre, the American minimal artist, as well as Hanna Darboven, A.R. Penck, and Solowit. And then there's, you know, some documents that are contained in interesting containers, i.e. The boys' contribution is contained in a carrier bag. It's a sort of miniature version of an edition that he published, I believe, previously. Let's review some of these contents.
So, Panamarenko Salto Arte may have had a Japanese or Chinese, maybe a spoof? Or...
No, I mean, I think that was probably just an interest of Panamarenko at that moment. I can't speak to why he chose this image. It's a very,
Chinese.
Yeah, but it contains this, you know, what the image depicts is this cigar box with this, what?
Like a cockroach or a beetle?
Cockroach or beetle popping out, being actually with the tail almost being connected to the box. And what you've got here, you know, is a box of things. But I can't speak to, you know, the sort of Asian, the Asian image. Let's see. So obviously it was something that, this image was something that Panamarenko was quite pleased with, as the catalog Resume of Multiples by Panamarenko includes this same image as the cover. I'd like to get in there, so.
Okay. Go ahead.
No.
Oh, in here.
Yeah. So, just to see if we can get some clue about this image. Offset. Print number, edition of E.C. Fisman. That's very interesting. E.C. Fisman, I guess, was a co-publisher of this box with Poor. E.C. Fisman was a big collector of Wide Wide Space and other Belgian galleries from that moment. He's still living. But when you look at this, when you look at what is depicted here as the oeuvre of Panamarenko, it's not exactly clear to me about this selection of this Chinese figure. No. Not exactly clear to me. Anyway. As to the contents. There is an Anatole, sort of, I guess, poster print.
Notation.
Material on Hubert Villepoix, collected by Carl André. It's a folder, an envelope, that... includes a 7 leaves, 7 sheets of paper where André, in his very particular hand, has written some sort of memo on the Villepoix circle, which I don't have any idea what the Hubert Villepoix circle is. No, through no fault of your own, I've never heard of the tragic Hubert Villepoix. His flowering was brief, but no less brilliant for its brevity. It was clear that he was cut off at the height of his powers. It is my great good fortune, thanks should be accorded here to Herr Dr. Professor Conrad Fischer Lug, executor of the estate, for his kind permission in allowing me to examine these precious, albeit dishearteningly few pages, to have before me the 9 sheets of bordered cross-section paper, which are the last works of Hubert Villepoix. They are in order of their composition, arranged from first to ninth and last. Not to dwell on this too long, but... I guess the first part is concerned with the 1972 Olympic conservation piece. The second part, the execution series. Third part, lunette pieces. Fourth, Carl André Air piece. Highly confidential, Carl is unknown. 5, Carl André Air piece 2. 6, Carl Air piece 2. 3, rather. 7, Carl André reject piece. It goes on until the end here of Reject Pieces by André. Might just get a shot.
You want me to get that?
If you'd like, yeah.
Stephen Lieber? Hello? Hi, Ted. We're in the middle of our audio taping.
So the next contribution in this box is I Baldari.
Can we call you back?
I don't know much,
okay,
if anything, about this this contribution. Takes the form of essentially a
okay.
It takes the form of a printed sheet. Next work is a little more understandable, to me anyway, and it's a Ben contribution, and it's on a piece of, it looks to be...
is that Ben's signature?
Yeah, exactly. It's some sort of spray-painted
nice.
Ben. No, it actually isn't.
Poor.
It says poor, and it's...
Is that the publisher's poor?
Yeah, exactly. The publisher is poor. And but at the same time, it's poor. It almost looks like Ben, doesn't it? But it's not.
Ben.
Yeah, I'm not sure where the Ben part is, although it is in French and it might be, yeah, it's signed by Ben. I can't really speak to the content of this work simply because it is in French.
Do you think that's a... I mean, he spray painted all.
Yeah, that's what I think he must have done. It's what
it
seems.
This would be a unique multiple.
Right, exactly. And also, what's interesting about this is it is signed Ben, and a lot of these. Well, I can't tell. Maybe that is signed.
Okay.
The Andre contribution. Is not signed, to my knowledge. Anyway, it's just interesting because I'm under the impression this was Conrad Lube's box, and maybe the edition of 31 boxes reserved for the artist, not all of them may have been, not every contribution may have been signed. For example, this Boy's contribution.
And this is the one that comes in the same tote
this,
bag.
Yeah, this is the carrier bag work, which he did previously. Try to get the actual site for this, just for...
So it looks like a diagram about direct democracy.
It is. So that says 70... That's 75...
And inside it has some reproductions of works by him.
No, I don't think so. Did you open it? It's not reproductions of work inside. It's political tracts. Okay. How the dictatorship of the parties can be overcome is the what this work is based on. Printed polyethylene shopping bag with information sheet and felt object. That is reproductions of works or documentations of works. That's Stuk 17. That's Iphigenie.
Coyote work.
Yeah, then Iphigenia. And then documentation of Coyote. But the rest of it is dealing with this this same, how the dictatorship of the party can be overcome. And what's interesting here for me is to look actually in the notes of this catalog resume of the multiples by Boys to see how they mention what they mention about this bag. The same bag, smaller in size and printed in Flemish on one side, occurs in number 149. It also exists in English, Dutch, and Spanish other versions. Now that's not really what I was looking for. See note 12. Occurs in number 149. Let's just look at 149, see if this is the same item.
So, I mean, to really know what's in here, it's an incredible amount of cross-referencing.
Okay. Special issue of the Journal Pour, edition of 70. Nah, it touches on it. Anyway, I see this as... in fact, carrying information, reproductions of Boy's works or documentation of Boy's works. This is not included based on my that quick review as something that has been considered to be part of... It's not in the catalog resume of multiples, to my knowledge. Let's just not put it in. It's too tight of a fit. Okay. The Boltanski contribution is a reproduction of one of these mid-70s dramatic works by Boltanski. He was funny at that point. Let's just see again. It's strange about this edition. It's not often. There is only certain resources, reference books that cite this this boxed edition. Just for example, in looking at the Boltanski catalog resume of printed material. It does not appear. So it's just curious how in some cases those people that are collecting this material for that sort of publication have not included this. Whether or not that's because the artist didn't consider this contribution to the publication to be a work by him or her, it is a possible reason. However, I've been told that this box, despite the fact that it's produced in an edition of 1,000, in fact, there are not many around. Supposedly, the edition burned soon after the presentation of this the material. It's supposedly the store of this stuff, the storage of this edition burned, and thus the rarity. However, I can't confirm that. The buyer's work is the next contribution, and I've never undid this, but now I can see it's a piece of black crepe paper, and the question is crumpled black crepe paper, which would be a very typical material for buyers to have used at this moment in time, and you know, before and after. However, whether or not there is an image here,
Looks like something in gold.
In gold, yeah. In the center, but I...
Or writing.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Oh, it is writing. I see it now. There is some writing. I think it says Salto Arte, which doesn't really seem like something he would have done. That's hard to make out. It's a gold writing, not the typical microscopic writing by buyers, not microscopic, microscopic printed messaging by him. This looks rather, this almost looks like it's not even done by him. Or if it was, it could be hand done opposed to printed. Which I guess is possible.
Going back to the buyer's catalog resume now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I haven't done this per contribution, but it is interesting to see that so far out of four or five contributions, where four or five of these artists have catalog resumes of this sort of material, only one thus far has noted the contribution. Bookarbeiten, it's not it. Okay, editions and multiples, 75, 100-page book, Golden Tower. Yeah, again, it's not listed in this publication. So maybe it was not considered to be a work by the artist. Next contribution is by an artist named Jacques Charlier. And this is signed, apparently. What this takes the form essentially of a poster or a print folded in half. I don't know terribly much about Charlier besides a project, an artist book that he did that was concerned with an opening of on Kawara's exhibition at the Palais des Beaux-Arts, has a lot of very local Belge Brussels notables that are pictured, and it's a rather funny, humorous book. This is the Christo, and this would be, in my opinion, one of the more significant contributions in the box.
Mounted, wrapped.
Yeah, mounted, wrapped. It's the Journal Pour. I can't tell if that is a signature by Christo or not. This was the show that I'm talking about. The catalog for the exhibition that these artists were included in, which did not go by the same title as Salto Arte. This box is one thing,
uh-huh.
Okay, but this went alongside or was somehow connected to, despite the fact the offering materials don't note it, connected to an exhibition which was Je Nu 1975 at this venue. I mean, this is the title of the show, to my knowledge, and there is an exhibition catalog for this show, and I see this publication having some relationship to it, although it doesn't appear in the publication, this publication, that they don't make sense of it somehow. But anyway, this is the contribution by, well, strangely enough, the curator, Johannes Clauters, who I guess may have been an artist as well. I didn't know that. And he was
the one behind all of the Mönchengladbach boxes.
Yes, he was the curator of the City Museum of Mönchengladbach. And this is a piece of white fabric. Actually, is rather large. Imprinted on it is this Je, Je Nu 1975 with a W, I, K, and J somewhere as well. I don't see anything else that is noted on this, but it based on the contents sheet here, it suggests that it is by Johannes Clauters.
What is it called? Is it a tablecloth? Is it a?
It doesn't say. This is a contribution by Dakin. I don't know who he is. It's kind of again, it's a print. Yeah, it's a kind of. I don't know. I see it
kind
as
of a folded.
Yeah, there's
paperwork.
Yeah, I mean, it has this sort of feeling of Dorothea Rockburn somehow to me. An artist book by Hanna Darboven, a text of Charles Baudelaire, as well as text by Heinrich Heine, Enrique Santos Diespello, a text by Homero Manzi, a text by Karl Kraus, as well as Celedonio Flores, with the text by those authors appear as front matter, and then more typical Darboven contribution you see for the rest. This is Inner Catalog Resume of Artists Books, and it's interesting. It's two color publication. Yeah, this is not signed. So anyway, this is the Filiu contribution, and this is in the Catalog Resume of Filiu Multiples as well, and it's a kind of standing object. Anyway, as to what it says, unfortunately, my French is not good enough to go further. As our hour is about to close, I'll just mention the other artists that contributed to this publication: Hans Hacke, P.A. Hubert, Douglas Hubler, Jörg Immendorf, Jean Legac, Solowit, Bern Lohaus, who is married to Annie Decker of Wide Wide Space, Conrad Lug Fischer, Annette Messager, the partner of Boltanski, Nicola, I don't know who that is, maybe it's Nicola Di Maria, although I'm not positive, Yoko Ono, Panamarenko, again we know, A.R. Penck, Penot, Sigmar Polka, Katarina, Sieverding, Klaus Steck, Steck Editions, who published like 250 Boys editions, and a Belge artist, Van Raffelgem, who I'm not terribly familiar with. In any case, to sum up as to this box, where the box itself is an artwork, not just a container for an artwork. This is an overview, you might say, of, I don't want to say cutting edge, but, let's just say advanced idea-based art from the late 60s, early 70s. This would be a quite representative international survey of such artworks, having contributions by artists associated with minimalism, happenings in fluxus, narrative art, you know, Nouveau Realism, conceptual art, artists that were involved with institutional critique, etc. It would make for a very interesting library-like exhibition at minimum, if not an exhibition in a print gallery context, a lot of these objects a lot of these contributions go on the wall. However, others are tabletop works and others are more book-like. But in any case, it's a distinctive group publication for its breadth of contributors and range of contents. I guess that's
It's 3 o'clock.
All I really can say for the moment.